So here at the end of the hour, you made it through your teens, 20s, and 30s. How are you fixed for the other decades?
Hi, this is Anne Marie from Springfield, Missouri. And I am watching my parents in retirement. They're loving their late 60s, and I worry that I probably won't be able to retire till my 80s. So why don't we do a walkabout in our late 60s where we get a few years to relax and enjoy the beautiful things while we're able, and then we can go back to the workforce offering wisdom to others until we can no longer work.
Thanks for that advice, Anne Marie. As we've been talking about all week, an aging population changes everyone's plans. How are you fixed for your last act? From Steamboat Springs, Colorado, I would have to come up with a better plan for financing it, and I would only want to if I could remain in good health and active. I do like the idea, mainly because I'm in my 30s with no children. I'm nervous about not knowing my grandchildren well since I waited so long to start a family. Genomic life scientist J. Craig Venter talked about his initiative this week on The Takeaway to use gene science to stretch out the older years, developing preventive therapies that he says one day will be accessible to everyone. But is the economy ready for all of this aging? Courtney Coyle is Associate Professor of Economics at Wellesley College. She looks at this precise question for the Knapp Social Science Center at Wellesley. Welcome.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
So help me to understand what happens economically as a sort of social question when lives extend. I can certainly understand that, you know, I need to plan more if I've got, you know, 6 decades ahead of me as opposed to 2 decades ahead of me. But broadly, what does it mean?
On the cost side, I think everyone's mind immediately goes to the expenditures on the elderly through the Social Security program, Medicare, and other programs like that, and the fact that longer life expectancies put greater pressure on those programs and therefore government finances, and that's well understood. But it's important, I think, to think of longer lifespans as representing an opportunity as well, that there's a contribution to society that comes from longer life. People have the ability to work longer, and that's a transition that we're already seeing. Rates of labor force participation at ages 65 and above for both men and women are higher than they've been over the last 15 or 20 years. They're trending up. Older people can help families. That's something a lot of people know from firsthand experience, take care of the grandchildren or do other things to relieve pressure on busy working families. And obviously, seniors have a lot of opportunities, a lot of potential to do volunteer work in their communities, whether that's as a docent in a museum, a tutor in a school, sort cans at a food pantry, and so on. So there's increasing evidence, too, that remaining active doing work or work-like activities has cognitive benefits for the individual as well. So I think there's a real possibility here for a rich and rewarding third act for the individual that has benefits for the society as well.
So lots to talk about there. Let's take that apart a little bit. I'm wondering that an aging population that is inclined to work longer is going to embrace retiring at a later age. And so all of a sudden, the controversy surrounding, making retirement later, changing Social Security's assumptions is just going to melt away by sheer strength of numbers of people living beyond their 70s and 80s.
I think it may be true that it's becoming easier to envision a way in which the system could be reformed to put it on better financial footing in the future, if only that when you look at Social Security, its problems seem to pale compared to those with Medicare and funding health care costs. And I think you're right that increasing the expectation of how many years people will work is likely to be part of the solution. As people, I'm sure, already know, the Social Security normal retirement age, that is the age at which you're entitled to the sort of regular 100% of your benefits, used to be 65. It's currently 66, and it's slated to rise to 67. That's based on changes that were already passed a long time ago. But there's talk about that increasing, you know, perhaps to as much as age 70, or perhaps being indexed to life expectancy so it would rise automatically. Because I think there is an appreciation that this is a program that was established in 1935. Life expectancy has increased greatly since then, and we can't necessarily expect to leave the structure of the benefit program exactly in place the way it was as we have these longer life expectancies. But there needs to be, you know, sort of a nuanced look at how that affects different subgroups of the population, because it's probably fair to say it's not equally easy for all workers to extend their work lives.
No, certainly, but the level of controversy surrounding whether we extend the retirement age to age 75 even seems to be declining precipitously. And as you refer to the assumptions that were made about the aging population in the 30s when Social Security was set up, The aging population was a fringe population in the 1930s, and today the aging population is actually a central productive component of the workforce.
Retirement itself is basically a fairly modern concept. If you go back to the late 1900s or the early 20th century, the fraction of people at ages 65 and above, 75 and above, you know, of those people were still alive at those ages, very, very many of them were working, you know, something like three quarters or very high fractions, because it just simply wasn't any choice. People had to work to survive. You know, we live in a different era now. We have Social Security. We have pensions, we hope. We have other sources. We save for retirement. We have other ways of supporting ourselves in retirement. And so retirement has become a luxury that we've been able to afford as our society has gotten richer. But that doesn't necessarily mean that we can afford to spend an ever-increasing share of our lifespan in that period of retirement.
I know people who actually start their working life with an idea of when they're going to retire, and that's completely unheard of. That's beyond a luxury. That's almost a mainstream consideration. Retirement is almost one of the first things you think about when you join the workforce.
It is something that people think about and plan for. And I think, you know, as we face it, realities of, again, rising healthcare costs and more years of retirement to fund because of this rising life expectancy, for those people who are able to do so, probably the smartest thing you can do if you get to, say, being in your 60s, the smartest thing you can do from a financial point of view to set yourself up for greater financial success in retirement is to extend that work life by a number of years if you can. For some people, that's staying at their existing job. For other people, it's transitioning to a so-called bridge job, maybe a job that offers reduced hours, more flexibility, less stress, something that might be more commensurate with the work experience the person's looking for at that point. But if people can continue in the labor force in one way or another, and importantly, if they can delay claiming those Social Security benefits, because I think people are aware of this, but it's important to realize that the monthly benefit amount you get depends in a very direct way on the how old you are when you start that benefit. You can delay under the current system without any changes to it. You can delay the startup, the take up of benefits all the way to age 70. And you know, compared to someone who would have been eligible for $1,000 a month if they claimed at 66, that gets reduced to $750 a month if you claim at 62, and to over $1,300 a month if you claim at 70. So there's a lot of money on the table, you know, in terms of boosting your monthly income if you are able to wait until you begin drawing down Social Security.
Courtney Coyle, Associate Professor of Economics and Director of the Knapp Social Science Center at Wellesley College. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Along with me, two branches of